Chapter 19. The wrecker had awakened the instant the train had stopped. He parted the shade a crack and saw the sun shining on pink Sherman granite, which the railroad quarried for track ballast. They would be in Cheyenne for breakfast. He closed his eyes, glad for another hour of sleep. A locomotive thundered past the sidetrack limited. The wrecker opened his eyes. He rang for the porter. "George," he said to Jonathan, "why have we stopped?"
"Stop for water, sir."
"Why did a train overtake us?"
"Don't know, sir."
"We are the Limited."
"Yes, sir."
"What train would be faster than this one, damn you?" The porter flinched. Senator Kincaid's face was suddenly racked with rage, his eyes hot, his mouth twisted with hate. Jonathan was terrified. The senator could order him fired in a breath. They'd throw him off the train at the next stop, or right here on top of the Rocky Mountains.
"There weren't no train passing us, sir. It was just a locomotive all by itself."
"A single locomotive?"
"Yes, sir. Just him and his tender."
"So it must have been a chartered special."
"Must have been, sir. Just like you say, sir. Gone lickety-split, sir."
The wrecker lay back on the bed, clasped his hands behind his head, and thought hard.
"Will there be anything else, sir?" Jonathan asked warily.
"Coffee." Bell's chartered locomotive raced through Cheyenne stockyards and into Union Depot shortly after 9 in the morning. He ran directly to the Interocean Hotel, the best among the 3-story establishments he could see from the station. The house detective took one look at the tall man in ripped and torn evening clothes and blood-soaked shirt and crossed the lobby at a dead run to intercept him.
"You can't come in here looking like that.
Bell, Van Dorn Agency, take me to the tailor and round up a haberdasher, a shoeshine boy, and a barber."
"Right this way, sir." "Shall I get you a doctor, too?"
"No time." The Overland Limited glided into Union Depot 40 minutes later. Isaac Bell was waiting on the platform at the middle of the train, looking far better than he felt. His entire body ached and his ribs hurt with every breath. But he was groomed, shaved, and dressed as well as he had been at the poker game the night before, in crisp black evening clothes, snow-white shirt, silk bow tie and cummerbund, and boots shined like mirrors. A smile played across his swollen lips. Someone on this train was in for a big surprise. The question was, would the wrecker be so shocked that he gave himself away? Before the train stopped rolling, Bell stepped aboard the Pullman just ahead of the dining car, pulled himself painfully up the steps, crossed the dining car, and sauntered in. Forcing himself to stand and walk normally for the benefit of all watching, he asked the steward for a table in the middle, which allowed him to see who entered from either end. Last night's $1,000 tip in the observation car had not gone unnoticed by the train crew. He was seated immediately and brought hot coffee, steaming breakfast rolls, and a warm recommendation to order the freshly caught Wyoming cutthroat trout. Bell had watched every man's face as he had come into the dining car to gauge reactions to his presence. Several, noting his evening attire, remarked with a clubby smile, "Long night?" The Chicago meatpacker gave him a friendly wave, as did the well-dressed drummer he had spoken with in the washroom. Judge Congdon wandered in and said, "Forgive me if I don't join you, Mr. Bell. With the obvious exception of a young lady's company, I prefer my own in the morning." Kenny Bloom staggered into the diner with a hangover clouding his eyes and sat beside Bell.
"Good morning," said Bell.
"What the hell is good about it?"
"Say, what happened to your face?"
"Cut myself shaving."
"George! George! Coffee over here before a man dies!"
Bruce Payne, the oil lawyer, hurried up to their table, talking a blue streak about what he had read in the Cheyenne newspapers. Kenny Bloom covered his eyes. Jack Thomas sat down at the last empty chair and said, "That's a heck of a shiner." Cut myself shaving. "There's the senator. Hell, we don't have room for him. George, George! Rustle up another chair for Senator Kincaid. A man who loses as much money as he did shouldn't have to eat alone." Bell watched Kincaid approach slowly, nodding to acquaintances as he passed through the dining car. Suddenly, he recoiled, his expression startled. The well-dressed drummer had leaped up from his breakfast, reaching out to shake hands. Kincaid gave the salesman a cold stare, brushed past, and proceeded to Bell's table. "Good morning, gentlemen. Feeling satisfied, Mr. Bell?" "Satisfied about what, Senator?" "About what?" "About winning nearly $1 million last night, a fair piece of which was mine." "That's what I was doing last night," said Bell, still watching the doors. "I was trying to remember. I knew it was something that caught my attention." "It looks like something caught your attention full in the face. What happened? Did you fall off a moving train?" "Close shave," said Isaac Bell, still watching the doors. But though he lingered over breakfast until the last table was cleared, he saw no one react as if his presence were a shock. He was not particularly surprised and only mildly disappointed. It had been a long shot. But even if he hadn't spooked the wrecker into revealing his identity, from now on the wrecker would be watching a bit anxiously over his shoulder. Who said a Van Dorn detective couldn't fly?